Hi, today is October 29th, 2023. This is the Mobile News Podcast 483. I'm Todd Agosawar, my good friend, John Westfall. Hello, John.
Yes. Hello. I am here to tell, I have a long tale of Apple woe to tell at the end of our podcast today.
Okay.
It will be
first, before we start with woes, I wanted to thank David Lasner, president of the University of Hawaii, for taking time to have lunch with me and record podcast 482. 2 days ago on Friday, and it was a lot of fun. It was good catching up and hearing what he had to say about a bunch of things, including distance learning and things like that, starting in the 1970s. But anyway, okay, so a couple of things. One thing that got fixed for me that I did not know until like a couple of days ago in iPad OS 17 is, you know, if you plug an iPad, now that iPads, recent iPads have USB-Cs. If you plug them into a hub with a going out to external display, or if you plug them in directly to an external display with a USB-C interface, and I have one of those, they're very cool. It still does. It automatically sends both the video and the audio through the HDMI cable, even if the other side doesn't have a speaker, and not all monitors have a speaker. And even if they do, a lot of monitors have junky speakers like mine. But now in iPad OS 17, you can redirect the audio back to the iPad. And so it's in the stage manager menu or something. But at any rate, it's possible now. And I did it to verify, and I'm happier. The other thing that I'm not exactly happy about, and I'm not sure, it's not a big problem, but it only started, I think, with iPad OS 17, is, again, if you plug an external monitor into an iPad, and maybe even an iPhone 15, it defaults to HDR. And I'm using like portable LCD displays, I think they're like 17 inches or something, 15-inch displays as my external display, and they are not HDR. And so what you see is a really washed out screen when you plug in a screen. You can go into settings and change it from SDR, high definition, to SDR, standard definition. And it looks like once you do it, it remains stuck in that position. So you don't have to do it every time you plug in. But just be aware, if you've upgraded your iPad in the last couple of weeks, and you haven't plugged into external display yet, that's what you'll find. So one thing fixed and one thing unfixed but fixable. So I'm pretty happy. The other thing is, and I mentioned this mostly because John was doing some like, not exactly journaling, but you're doing like this one dot thing, right? Years ago too.
I still am. Do that. And I've been kind of playing around with the mindfulness minutes feature where you can, you know, do mindful or I guess moment or whatever they're calling it on iOS, iOS 17. So I've been doing that in addition. So I'm still keeping my journaling regimen these days is I'm still keeping my year in pixels in Excel. Uh-huh. So that's very old school in a sense, but it works on everything. Because you can open an Excel document anywhere and sync it through Microsoft 365. And then I use Day One, which is the journaling app that's been around since 2014, 2013. I've been using that. And a lot of people have been worried that Day One is going to get replaced by the Apple Journal app, although I don't think anytime soon. And I also have been using the Mindful, basically, whatever they're calling it, where you log how you're feeling, state of mind is what Apple is calling it. And
iOS 17.
That is interesting in that I've now started seeing the correlation charts that it will make for you that will tell you kind of what your mood has been with your sleep or your activity and these other things. And recently, Aura, the smart ring that I use, has started trying to give you some more insights during the day. You know, it used to be that you just got three scores in the morning and then throughout the day, you didn't really get much new information. Well, now they've been adding stuff in where you can do tagging and more extensive tagging so that you can start to understand when you go into the refresh mode that they talk about or when you're stressed or all those things. So yeah, I am quantifying a ton of random things in my life these days.
Well, as a cognitive psychologist, that you are, I guess I'm not too surprised.
Yeah, I'm not either.
Are you paying for the premium, or are you using the premium or free day one?
I'm on the premium. I paid for it when it was a one time, and then I went to their, I think I locked in whatever their first rate was when they went to subscription. So I think I pay something like $25 a year for it, which I figure is decent.
Yeah, the current annual is $34.99 or $2.92 a month. And I can't do the math in my head times 12, but that sounds pretty close to $35. So it's not too expensive, although it is, you know, an annual price. I've got some other annual pricing that's driving me nuts because everything is going up. But yeah, so Apple's Journal app, which they announced for iOS 17, whenever iOS 17 was announced, is actually in the App Store, but you cannot download and install it unless you've got iOS 17.2 beta running. And I'm going to imagine that because the Journal app's already there, maybe it indicates that 17.2 is far enough along that they're going to go production and the Journal app from Apple will be available any day now. Maybe October 30th when they have their event.
Yeah, that would be about time, although they did just release the 0.1 update, so it'd be pretty rare to have 2-point updates in 1 month. They just started the betas for 0.2.
Mm-hmm.
We shall see. I think, you know, the Apple Journal app could potentially be a competitor to day one, just like the log of minutes could potentially be a competitor to what I'm doing in Excel right now. But I'm not worried about those two things going away, Excel and day one in my daily cycle anytime soon. If the first party app will do it better, then I might go to it eventually. As I have with reminders over the years, I used to use a third-party reminders app. Now I just use Apple Reminders because it has the features I need. But it will take it a while to get there.
You know, the thing that bothers me, well, not bothers me, the thing that I find interesting about the Journal, Apple's Journal app, is it only runs an iPhone. It said it is not run on a Mac or, presumably in iOS emulation mode or the iPad.
Yeah.
That seems like a bad idea, but oh well.
I agree, and I think the endpoints just aren't built out yet. Hopefully it will be built out, because that is one thing with day one that I often like, that I could make an entry from anywhere. I can make it from my phone. I can make it from my watch. I can make it from the desktop app. And I have done ones on my watch before, because the dictation will work pretty well. So you're out for a walk, and you just want to make a quick entry, you open up the app on the watch, hit record, talk for 10 minutes at a time at the most, I think, and it will transcribe and put it as a journal entry.
Yeah, the reason I chuckled, by the way, wasn't because what you were saying was humorous or I didn't find it serious, but when you started your list, I started thinking about Dr. Seuss's Green Eggs and Ham, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I can eat it in the house. I can eat it with a mouse. But anyway.
You know, one of this is reminding me, rhyming-wise, of there's a person on Instagram and other social platforms called There I Ruined It, and his whole thing is he takes and mashes up music from different genres and different groups, and also uses AI to emulate the, you know, emulate like Judy Garland and others that can't sing new things. So it's just kind of a unique thing. But he did one recently that was what the Red Hot Chili Peppers sound like to people who don't like the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And so he had done stereotypical music for Red Hot Chili Peppers, used one of their well-known songs and their rhyming scheme and their love of the word California in their lyrics. And one of the lyrics that made me laugh out loud was, "Carjacked a nun on the 101, got to have some fun in California." And I thought that just the rhyming of that and the visual. "Carjacked a nun on the 101, got to have some fun."
Yeah, it almost sounds like a dark Beach Boys lyric too, but...
It does, yeah. So you got to enjoy these moments of lyrical humor, regardless of where they come from.
By the way, I just discovered something really interesting about the Yay Link over-the-head headset. headset I've been using to record podcasts.
What a toupee.
Yeah.
Very useful.
Who knew?
Yes.
I just decided, you know, I had a little cough I felt coming on, so I lifted the boom mic away from my mouth to point straight up. to reduce the sound. It turns out when you do that, you mute the microphone and it tells you. It gives you a little muted. And when you put it back down, it says unmuted, which is awesome. I'm really happy with this headset. I'm happier with it now than I was before, and I was pretty happy with it before. So,
but if your hair wanted to say something, it can't.
Sigh. So true. So true. Well, actually, that's right. It couldn't because it would be muted with the microphone pointing straight up by the hair. Okay. So this, and I was just in our show notes, I just noted that this whole Apple Journal thing reminds me of Freeform, which is available on the iPad and Mac, but is not available on the web. And that bothers me.
Yes. Agreed.
Yeah. Okay. Speaking
Freeform and the Journal app should be on iCloud.com. They both should be there.
Yeah.
Supposed to be used.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so October 30th, the night before Halloween, Halloween Eve, Apple has a scary fast event. The rumors are no new iPads in 2023, so, you know, nothing there. So I guess it's just Macs.
Nothing all that exciting, it seems.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. But they're having an actual event versus, you know, just rolling out stuff in the Apple store. So, I don't know. Maybe there'll be, you know, like a relatively low-cost M3 device, like in a $1,000 range. But speaking of low-cost, the other rumor I just read in Mac Rumors is that for next year, not 2023, 2024, there's a rumor of a Apple Silicon-based MacBook in the $700 range. That's going to be with a 12-inch display.
Yeah, I did see that one. That does look like it would be very interesting. I would be interested in low cost as well as current, just because I have my wife has recently started using a Mac over the last couple of years, and so she's been using my older Macs, which means that I don't actually have a testing Mac of a current generation that I can play with. Though it would be sort of nice to have that.
Yeah, and as for me, you know, I'm pretty happy the Macs I have. I have a 2019 MacBook Pro, who, despite its advanced age, is, you know, I mean, it's Intel based, so it runs super hot. But aside from that, it runs fine. And I really like the touch bar. And I have a 2022 MacBook Air M1 or 2021, one or the other, but relatively recent M1 based MacBook Air, which, you know, it's great, and I don't feel like I'm losing anything about not having an M2 or anything like that, and runs cool. But, you know, at some point next couple of years, it'll be time to replace probably the MacBook Pro first. It's coming up on 4 years old now, so, you know, that's, you know, 2 years, let's say. So I'm hoping that in 2024, 2025, there'll be a retiree-friendly cost MacBook available to replace it. And you know, well, we'll see. I don't think it's going to be announced tomorrow. At least that's what I don't know. The rumors I've been reading are saying that it's not going to be announced tomorrow. It's a 2024 kind of thing. You know, we don't really talk about rumors much, except that $700 MacBook was too interesting to not discuss with you. And the other one, not that I want it, but I just think it's ridiculously expensive, is there's a rumor that Apple's testing tvOS on iPad mini sitting on top of a HomePod, and that struck me as a very expensive, you know, assistance solution, especially since, you know, the S person, our pal Siri, is not all that bright. So that'd be an $800 assistant, which you can buy, you know, you can buy an Echo Show for under $200 with a display, and the Google Pixel tablet with a dock/ speaker is down to $399 now, which I think is I bought it at $499. I still feel like I got a pretty decent deal with that. I used the combo quite a bit, actually, more than I suspected I would. I don't know. What do you think? $800 for HomePod and iPad mini? Doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I think that's a rumor that Apple would not have you smash those two together. What it might be is that the hardware in the iPad mini is close enough to what they would want to put in as hardware-wise for the screen component of a HomePod with the screen. So maybe that's what the rumor's basis is that they're working on something like that. Because I don't think it's a surprise to anyone that Apple wants to have a HomePod with a screen. That's one area that they don't have yet that would be a very nice way to go. I suspect they're wondering what's going to happen with the Google Pixel tablet that basically docks and ships with a dock. is that, right. You know, if that is a successful model, I could see Apple pushing that as the model for the next iPad mini. You know, you get a dock with it and you can just move it around your house. Because I suspect a lot of people use their iPad mini for more home-based recreational things versus work. I don't see a lot of iPad minis in my classrooms. I don't see a lot of them in meetings. But I do see, you know, the 11, 10, 11, and 12-inch iPads around. So,
yeah,
I wonder if the iPad mini is going to become the iPad that they pitched for. You know, leave it on your dresser during the day, and then at night, pick it up, go read, and then pop it back down when you're done, and it's your HomePod, and it's also your iPad.
Yeah, you know, I was gonna argue with you, but now that I think about it, back when I was, before I retired, I carried my iPad mini everywhere. Series of iPad minis, iPad mini 4, 5, and 6 over the last, you know, bunch of years. But I have to say that I was alone in this endeavor. I did not see anybody else. Like you, I saw other people carrying full-size iPads. So I guess I am the cheese and alone.
I used to take my iPad mini to work with me in my backpack, so I had a pocket that it would fit nicely in. And then I realized that over a year of doing that, I took it out and used it at work maybe 3 times.
Yeah. Oh.
And all 3 of those times I could have used my full-size iPad. It was just random times where I had some time to read, so I might open up iBooks and read. Well, I could have done that on my iPad Pro. I tried for a while using it in the classroom alongside either my iPad Pro or in place of my iPad Pro. It didn't really work. I still needed the bigger screen. That's why I think I still debate with myself getting a 12-inch iPad Pro instead of the 11-inch. But so now my iPad mini stays at home. It stays next to my bed, and I use it for reading and things around the house. I don't take it with me. And when I travel, now I leave the full-size iPad at home, and I take the iPad mini. Because if I'm taking my MacBook, which I always do, there's really no need for the iPad Pro. Unless it's
for a second big screen.
I'll take the iPad Pro instead of the iPad mini. So
yeah,
it just kind of depends on what I'm doing with it.
Yeah. Well, I just think it's way too expensive. And in fact, to be honest, even a $499 original price of the Pixel tablet plus dock was really too expensive, I think, to replace the Google Assistant series. It's just that my Google Assistant, the Lenovo Smart Display, was getting long in the tooth. And in fact, I think this past September, last month, I think Google cut off a lot of the services for it, so it would have been less useful than it has been for these years. So that was my rationale for shelling out $499. And now it's $399. So it's even, you know, less expensive for the exact same thing. We'll see. Okay. I'm kind of gearing myself up to hear you rant about something.
Okay. So this is a weird one, and there's some interesting nuance to it. The end of the story is that I don't really know if my resolution will be needed, but I'm going ahead with it because it took me 40 minutes on the phone with Apple. So yeah, I'm going to go with it. So watchOS and iOS 17.1 or 10.1 was released last week, formally on Wednesday. And I had stayed off the betas, because I hadn't really felt the need to be on the betas for either of them on my devices. But I was interested in the double tap feature, or the finger double tap feature, which is the new version of Assistive Touch and all that. So I thought, okay, I'll upgrade. So I upgraded my iPads, I upgraded my iPhone, I upgraded my watch. Did that Wednesday afternoon at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And my watch, I had just charged it that morning. As I've noted, I've been getting about 2 days of battery on my Apple Watch Ultra. I'm pretty happy about that. Just so happened to be that morning was the morning I needed to charge it. So I knew it was around 90% battery when I completed the update, because I also did an update with it on a charger. So that night I went out, I did some stuff. I came back, and about 9 o'clock at night, I get a ping on my watch saying, your watch needs to go into low power mode because you're at 10% battery. I thought, wait a minute, you were just at 90% battery 4 hours ago. Now, you know, so I look, sure enough, it's low. I put it on the charger. And when I put it on the charger, I tend to watch it charging from the Apple Watch or from the iPhone, you know, seeing my battery widget just to see. And it's not charging at the speed it's supposed to charge. It's charging very, very slow. And in fact, at one point, it just kind of stalls charging. And I go look at it and pick it up, and it's hot. Like, the watch is physically hotter than it's supposed to be. I'm like, well, this is weird and not right. And so I take it off charger for a while, put it back on charger. It charges a little more, but then it plateaus again, and it won't charge. And I go into the battery settings on the watch, thinking, well, maybe there's going to be something in there that helps me. Because the watch isn't giving any errors or anything. It's just not charging the way it's supposed to, and it's hot. And I look in the battery screen, and there's a message saying charging was on hold due to Apple Watch temperature. And it didn't actually pop that on the screen at all. I had to go into the settings to find that. So Wednesday night, I leave it on charge all night, which annoyed me because I had been like, to use the watch for the alarm and for sleep tracking, but whatever. So, because I'm like, it's literally, if I take it off charger, it's got this battery drain issue where it is draining not at 1 or 2% an hour, it is draining at about 1 or 2% every 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. You can almost watch it kind of draining down. So, like, well, this update obviously hosed something. That night, it charged up to maybe I think it got to 80% that night. And I had to switch it to the older charger, the slower charger, because then it wouldn't get as hot because it wasn't moving as much power through. Used it the next morning. I got it up to, I think, 100% mid-morning. And within 2 hours, it was back down to 20%. I mean, we're talking extremely fast battery drain.
Yeah.
Searching the forums, finding that this was an issue with watchOS 17.1 or 10.1 beta, but this is now the released software. So I'm like, well, this should have been, if this was a known issue in the beta, this should have been removed as an issue before the release, or should is the word there. Right. Then by the evening of Thursday evening, I'm like, well, this thing isn't getting any better, so I better, you know, try some stuff. So I unpair it, repair it. That didn't work. Unpair it, repair it, and set it up as a new watch without restoring a backup. That didn't work. Finally, I get on with Apple support and ran through all the diagnostics, which I will say the diagnostic setup that Apple has is pretty cool these days, where it will actually let them specify tests they want to run, and it will then run them and then send the results back to them. And that's kind of a cool setup I had not seen before. So neat. But, you know, when we finally did get the test to run, the guy tells me, well, I'm getting thermal errors on a lot of, you know, the OS. Like, I see that there are thermal flags being hit. He goes, weirdly enough, not on the battery. Like, well, and that is weird because the battery is the thing that keeps me going. So it basically is, you know, there's something going on, some process going on that's cooking the internals of the watch to the point that things are thermal throttling. But it's running down the battery real quick. It's not letting the battery charge the way it's supposed to. And the watch is just not working properly. So as we're talking, finally I said, you know, I just would like to get a replacement because I'm, you know, thinking this has got to be a hardware issue. It's not a huge widespread issue on the internet. So it's probably some weird hardware defect, although it's being reported across multiple Apple Watch versions, not just the Ultra 2. So he agrees to do that. I have AppleCare Plus. I'm able to do express replacement, get the new one ordered, unpair the old one, etc. And the new one is supposed to be here tomorrow. Of course, once you do that and you decide to make peace with the replacement, that's when things get interesting. So on the forums, I had noticed people talking about uninstalling all third-party apps, which the default on Apple Watch these days is to auto-install every watchOS app that you have a companion app on your iPad or your iPhone. So that's what I had on there forever. So I unchecked the auto-install, but that didn't see, and I uninstalled like a handful of apps, but it didn't seem to be doing much Thursday night, Friday morning. So finally, Friday, I left it on charge all morning. I came home around mid-afternoon because I was done at work. And people had been noting a specific app that had been a problem. So I uninstalled all of my third-party apps. And magically, my battery drain issue went away without any of the third-party apps installed. I have not installed any of the third-party apps. So the one that had been kind of consistently coming up in the forums has been the MobiFace app. If you use MobiFox watch bands, you can get the app. It'll let you get different faces for your watch bands. I have no idea if that was the one that was churning away on my phone or on my watch, because I uninstalled all of them and the battery drain issue has gone away. I've gone back to my normal battery life. So at this point, and people are also saying if you do go to the beta of watchOS 17.2, that the issue goes away as well.
Hmm.
So at this point, I am going to do the replacement because it's already shipping to me. And I think my Apple Care coverage has already moved over to the new watch that they're shipping to me. And I also have not ruled out that the about 24 hours of this thing cooking itself has not done some sort of internal damage to the watch.
Right.
But it is sort of an interesting issue that seems to be software related. It seems to be related to third-party apps misbehaving. And it also seems that Apple support doesn't do a good job of communicating amongst themselves, because rather infuriatingly, when you contacted them, and they did this to me, and they've done this to a lot of people on the forums, you tell them the issue, you tell them about it, and they come back after they run, you know, their checks internally of what they know about this, and they tell you, oh, this is because you're running a beta of watchOS 17.1, and you shouldn't, you know, this is what happens with betas. Basically, they do a little bit of mild chiding you and going, well, the only way to get rid of it is you got to send it in, and we'll flash it back down to watchOS 10, and you're out of a watch for a couple of weeks while we do this for you because you went and did the beta. And then when you correct them and say, look, you released it today, so no, it's not the beta. They basically go, well, that's what we were told. So it's sort of very infuriating that Apple support, and I've seen people talking about how Apple support, the first line text, don't get notifications of updates being pushed to broad. So this is, I'm sure, a week ago, what some support bulletin told them to say. But it is very patronizing and very frustrating and infuriating when a product that you're paying, you know, by the time it's all said and done, $1,000 for, or, you know, whatever, you're being told, oh, you were the one that caused this because you went for that beta that we warned you about, when in reality, it was a general release, a release that has been causing it.
Well, you may recall, John, which version of the iPhone was it? Maybe it was 3G, that people were complaining about dropped calls, and Steve Jobs was still alive at the time, obviously. Steve Jobs said, you're holding it wrong.
Yes. But even that is not as infuriating, I think, as just misstating the facts. You know, you're running a beta. No, I'm not. Yes, you are.
Yeah.
No, I know I'm not running a beta. And if you were to look up, you know, any information, I mean, I literally sent the tech that worked with me, he gave me that line, and I said, no, you're incorrect. This was released today. And I sent him an Apple.com press release. And his response back to me was basically, this is what I was told. That's just all I am. And so I said, please escalate me. And that's when I got on a 40-minute phone call with an actual tech that could do some troubleshooting. But it is sort of a weird world where that happens. And like I said, if this had gone away on its own, I probably wouldn't worry about it. But since the replacement's already shipping, and I am a little concerned that a 24-hour period of this thing being at max processor may have done some damage to its internals.
Yeah.
I
agree with you.
Yeah. So we'll see. Hopefully I'll do the swap tomorrow. I'll send back this one, and I'm going to be very judicious with third-party apps from this point forward. I think I've turned off that auto-install because I don't use most of them anyway. There's really only one third-party app I ever use, and that's AnyList, because I use it at the grocery store and check off items as I'm putting them in my cart. It's just easier from my watch than pulling out my phone. So I don't think I'm going to allow it to install all of them in the future.
And I'm just checking I've got a much older watch. I've got the Apple Watch 6, but I've got automatic app install turned off as well. But that's because, you know, how fixed in my ways I am. Back when I had an Apple Watch 4 with this extremely limited amount of storage, I kept running out of space. I couldn't even do updates because my watch kept running out of space. I just deleted all third-party apps and data from whatever. And then turned off automatically install basically on all my watches subsequently. But yeah, that's gonna be I hope your watch is repaired. And I was gonna say heat is the enemy.
Yes. Yeah, heat definitely is. And heat can cause long term damage. I'm pretty sure I've had routers die because they've just been overheated and cooked. So I'm gonna hope that this will avoid any of those issues. And I also will probably reset up, even though I think I don't need to. I probably will reset this up as a new Apple Watch and not a restore.
Yeah. So you don't get any cruft from the backup. You know, while you were talking, I went to the Apple to support.apple.com and looked around. It has a very, very fine help for you, John. It says, if your Apple Watch gets too hot, take it off. Well, it says, if you're wearing your device, remove it from your wrist. And it says it in a much more eloquent way than what I should. But basically it's saying, take it off. It doesn't give you much after that. It says, that's pretty much it. That's kind of sad.
And here is another weird little tidbit for people that are wondering. So if you do want to remove Apple Watch backups, which you would think are, you know, you would go to iCloud backup and look in there, and that's where you see your iPad's backups and your Apple Watch's backup. That is not where apparently the Apple Watch's backup goes. It's only for iPads and iOS and iPhones. For that, you have to go to settings and then general and then iPhone storage on your iPhone, and then go to watch the Apple Watch app. Which I am actually looking to find right now. And that is where you should be able to find your Apple Watch iCloud backups. They're not in the general iCloud backup area. Huh. Yeah, that's where they're at.
In the Apple Watch app itself?
No, it's in, you have to go to settings on your iPhone, then general, then iPhone storage, then find the Watch app.
Huh.
And that's where you can find your backups for all of your Apple Watch, your old watches and everything else.
Huh. And it's not alphabetical.
No.
Why isn't it? Oh, it's by size. It's by size. Oh, it's because I have it sorted by size. Okay. So I just sorted it by, and I can't get past B. That's why I did. Wow. I didn't realize I had so much stuff installed. But, you know, John, I have to thank you for pointing this to me because it just solved a completely different problem that I have. And I'm still scrolling to get to W. Oh, there's watch. Okay. Interesting. Remove all backups. Oh, wow. I've got stuff from 2017. Huh. So one of the things years ago, my daughter, we've never had even a dog, but my daughter loves corgis. And so I bought a emoji pack, Welsh Corgi dog stickers and emojis, and which is not available anymore in the App Store, I think. Anyway, it disappeared after an update, but now that I look at it, it's over in Google Cloud, and I guess I could download it. Can I download it? Reinstall app. I might do that. It's only 20K. No, unable to install. It's not, okay, it's basically not compatible. So I'll just leave it in the cloud to your mind that once. You know.
You saw corgis.
Far away. Yes. We saw corgis.
Oh, I will also note, here's an interesting thing. If you are an Apple Watch user and you then unpair your last Apple Watch, you might wonder what happens to your fitness information. Because it used to be that in order to fill your rings, you had to have an Apple Watch. And now after iOS 16, you can actually use your iPhone for at least a Move ring. But your Move ring with your iPhone is different than your Move ring with your Apple Watch. So I will tell you, on Friday morning was the first day where from the beginning of the day, I did not have an Apple Watch paired to my iCloud account or my iPhone.
Because your battery
first time ever in a long, long time that I had woken up without an Apple Watch. Because I've had an Apple Watch since, 2015 when the first one came out. So I went for a walk that morning. I took my iPhone and yes, my Move ring, which the other two rings disappear, your green and blue rings, they disappear. Red ring
exercise
is still there.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, I wonder what this is going to do to my Move streak, because I've had a very long move streak, thanks to when I started exercising more. And I have something like 1,248 days or something like that. It's a very long move streak. So I kind of made peace on Thursday night. I was going to lose my move streak. But then I thought, well, you know what? The Apple Watch, the iPhone could do move ring, so maybe it'll keep it. No, it doesn't. It is a separate sort of move ring than the Apple Watch move ring. And I know that because Friday afternoon, when I did pair the watch again to see if the battery issue would go away, all of a sudden, even though I had passed my move streak, it triggered that longest move streak again. So, case in point, if you do have to remove your Apple Watch or send it in for service or things like that, you will lose your longest move streak, even if you then revert to just the iPhone collecting your move data. So,
yeah, you know, all of these things that we've been doing to quantify ourselves over the last more than a decade now, I guess, is interesting and it's fun, but it can also be very frustrating. I know the feeling.
And it's,
speaking of,
it's dumb, but it's that same joke where people say, well, you know, my Apple Watch is working, I'm not going to go out and exercise, I don't get credit for it. You know, it's dumb to think about that. Yes, you are getting credit for it. You're just, you know, I think
not measuring
the group that did it right, I think was, MyFitnessPal, where your streak, as long as you weren't changing it very often, they would just take your word for it. You know, you could say, my streak doesn't look right. Oh, well, then what should it be? Well, it should be blank. And then that would just become your new streak. Because honestly, why not? What matter does it really make? There's no money attached.
You know,
it's just literally. So Apple could let you set your streak to whatever you'd like at any given time.
No, two things I was going to say. One is Fitbit and one is my scale. My scale, I have a Bluetooth scale. It's not a white thing, by the way, which I really wanted, but I could not get. Won't ship via Amazon, and Sam's Club was sold out when I went last time. Well, every time I go, it's been sold out. But the Bluetooth scale I do have that did ship to Hawaii lets you edit your weight. You don't like what the weight is required. You can edit.
I think that should be a more common thing, because really, who cares? You know, if you want to, it's sort of like enabling cheats in a video game. If that's the way you're going to enjoy your video game, then that should be fine. You paid for it. You know,
why not?
Of course, I always joke that the same thing applies with novels, where I always say you should just, you know, if I want to buy a mystery novel, read the first few chapters and then go, well, I wonder who did it, and then jump to the last chapter and read that. That should be fine. I mean, it's your novel. You bought it. You can do whatever you want with it. But people get really angry when you say you're going to do that.
Oh, yes. Purists, you know. I should note there is a legitimate reason why I wanted to edit my weight. And that's one day we were wondering how heavy our pet had become. And so I stood on the scale and I weighed myself. And I grabbed the pet and stood with it on the scale and, you know, took the difference. And that's the weight, right? Except now I have this giant spike in my weight for one day. And I said, well, that's just not right. So I edited that out as an incorrect data point. The other thing I wanted to mention is Fitbit. You know, I've been kind of ranting and raving and complaining about Fitbit's recent updates, including from the Charge 4 to Charge 5, where it lost the ability to count stair counts, you know, when you go up the stairs. And, you know, that's a hardware thing, so that's not coming back. But one of the things they broke in the recent upgrade to their app is that they removed the battery indicator. So, you know, it used to be you pop up the app and it shows you your step counts and other stats. But right at the top right corner, it also showed you your charge level of Fitbit. And that's kind of important to know, because you want to charge your Fitbit before, you know, if you're going to have an active day, or even if you're not going to have an active day, just so you don't have to break your day so you don't have to stop walking because you're not getting credit. I do feel like that, by the way, I have to admit. But apparently enough people complain that they're going to restore that. And I should say, you know, the other two things is, well, Todd, don't you know that you can go, you know, you can click on, I think, settings, and there's a place for your battery. Maybe it wasn't settings, but it was somewhere in here where you could, oh, I know, click the upper left and you can click on your device and it should show you your battery. Except the Fitbit app on my iPhone consistently says my battery is full, even though it's like got 57% charge in reality. And the other thing is, well, how do you know that? Is, well, you can, does it mean you can see it on your chart? It's, yes, you can. If you have the eyes of an eagle and are prepared to squint a lot, especially if you have older eyes, it's got, it's probably like a 2-point font or something. It's just ridiculously small battery indicator. And you have to, so you go over to a screen and it's just a tiny, 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 tiny little indicator that shows you what your charge is. So yay, I'm glad enough of us complained to Fitbit, and they're at least they're restoring that. But I still think this is my last Fitbit. No more Fitbits after this. And who knows, because Google owns it now, they may kill it as they do with many other products we've used. Oh, speaking of killing, I got a nastygram from Google Voice saying that I had not used it recently and they're gonna cut off my account. And recycled the number. And I thought, you know, that's true. I've not used Google Voice recently for one reason or another. I used to use it all the time, you know, give that number out as my main text number, but I've not been doing that. So I texted myself to give it some activity, and I think I'm going to start giving it out as my texting number to people now. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, people are just getting nasty. Nasty, nasty, nasty. Okay. Well, I hope you get your new Ultra Watch soon. And that its battery is behaved.
Better behave itself.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I've been reviewing a whole bunch of stuff lately. So I think I'll talk about some of that. Maybe when you're gone in 2 weeks. I think you have some other obligations. But I think we'll have some other
opportunity.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that with whoever is on at that time.
Yep.
You're available next week, John? Next weekend, I should say. Okay, well, you know, even if there's nothing much at the Apple event at the Scary Fast, we can still complain about it, so that'll be fun. Alrighty. This has been Mobile Views Podcast 483. I'm Todd Agasa, or the always the good Dr. John Westfall.